The Oxford Sparks Podcast.
Episode 11, Learning.
Part 1.
There's a stereotype of teenagers just being a bit moody, a bit lazy, a bit incapable, but that isn't true. My name is Chris Harvey. I work at the Sleeping Circadian Neurosciences Institute at the University of Oxford. What we know is that there are documented biological changes that happen to the body clock during adolescence. Adolescence being defined as from the age of 10 until about 21. So during that period, your biological clock changes. And it changes in such a way that it develops what we call a delay. And what that means is you find it harder to sleep earlier, so you're biologically predisposed to a later bedtime, which means you also then want to sleep in later to get the sleep that you need. Also within this population, there's a greater sleep need. So in adolescence, you need between about 8 or 9 hours a night versus about 7 to 8 hours as an adult. So not only does their biology change, but their sleep need changes. And so what this means is that adolescents are typically around 2 hours sleep deprived every night. And we know that sleep deprivation has a massive impact on your ability to concentrate, to engage, to direct your attention, to control impulsivity, which obviously has issues with the classroom and your ability to learn, but also will have issues on your general health and well-being.
Chris works on a project called Teen Sleep, which is looking at the effect of delaying lesson start times for adolescents, particularly students taking their GCSEs.
What we are proposing to do is change the start time from 9 a.m. until 10 a.m. The way the circadian biology works in this population is they have a dip until around 7 o'clock in the morning. However, because they're also sleep deprived, this sleep deprivation interacts with the body clock and elongates this dip until about 10. So at 10 in the morning, that's when adolescence physiology starts to properly wake up. And that's where we're proposing a 10 a.m. start time. So it very much is based on the physiological profile of the circadian clock. So I think it's important to understand that we're not really focusing on the sleep deprivation aspect. We're focusing on when lessons start, starting at a time when your physiology is prepared to engage and maintain your alertness. So lessons starting at 10 should show an improvement in how much you engage, and that should have a knock-on effect to your achievement. We do have some pilot data which backs this up. At a school in the Northeast done this, they delayed school start time to 10 a.m. And what they found was an improvement in the percentage of people meeting the government cutoffs for GCSE performance. And this improvement was particularly pronounced in those who come from a deprived background. So we're hoping to replicate that finding, but in a much bigger scale, and also looking at the effect of sleep education alongside it.
The current phase of the study is looking at attendance rates.
What we would expect to find is a general increase in health. So we would expect illness and therefore absence to be lower. And also we'd expect, you know, lateness to be lower, and also behaviour issues. So less people being excluded from classes. So we would expect the attendance to increase. Well, this is data that we'll gather directly from the schools, from the registers, how many students are put on suspensions, expulsions, given punishments, and we would expect that the behaviour issues would decrease, particularly due to the relationship between sleep and impulsivity. We know, for example, that during adolescence is a period of increased impulsivity because the parts of your brain which control impulsivity aren't fully developed until you're in 21. If you combine that with sleep deprivation, that alone will also increase impulsivity, so it is quite an issue in this population. And so we'd expect better sleep, better quality sleep to improve these factors.
But will moving the start of the school day encourage adolescents to stay up later in the evenings?
Some adolescents might end up staying up later. In fact, they probably will, because that's what their physiological clock is telling them to do. And as I say, the point of the delayed school start time isn't necessarily about minimising the sleep deprivation. It's about working with their biology so that they're learning when their biology wants to. So yeah, I think we'll see the time that they're going to bed becoming slightly later, but in line with their biology. Because of the nature of the study, this is a real-world trial. It's a big study with massive policy implications. So we're not saying that schools have to keep the doors closed until 10. We're saying start the lessons at 10. So it may well be that students are still getting up and being dropped off at school at 8:30, you know, to accommodate parents' working schedules, the school run, all that stuff. Also gives schools the flexibility to move after-school activities to the beginning of the school day. And we need to have that flexibility because we're working in the real world. So the point is about learning when your circadian biology wants to learn, rather than fixing the sleep deprivation. Your circadian rhythm is your biological clock. A whole host of processes within your physiology have a biological rhythm. They fluctuate in accordance with certain times of day. This is programmed primarily through light. Light is what we call the strongest zeit giver or time giver. So bright light resets your biological clock and keeps you working in tune to a 24-hour day. It's controlled by the suprachiasmatic nucleus in the brain. That's the master clock, and it keeps all the other clocks in your body working in tune with each other so that your physiological systems all work together and your rhythms stay intact. And the most obvious outcome of your circadian biology is your sleep-wake pattern. That's the one that most visible and most salient to most people. So you have two systems which control your sleep homeostasis, which basically says the longer you're awake, the more you want to sleep. Which sounds very intuitive. But actually, if that system worked alone, what we'd find is you'd wake up fresh as a daisy every morning. That obviously isn't the case for almost anyone. And then progressively, you get more and more tired as the day goes on. Your ability to concentrate will get less and less. That's not what happens. We are able to concentrate throughout most of the day, and we have dips in our tiredness and peaks in our alertness throughout the 24-hour day. That's because of our circadian biology, which underpins a sleep homeostasis, which follows a pretty standard rhythm. There's some variation, obviously, but it's pretty standard across everyone.
Chris explains how everyone has a chronotype, a natural disposition to want to wake up slightly earlier or later.
We've not looked at this specifically in adolescents, but in the general population, there is this natural variation. People have what we call a chronotype, either an owl type or a lark type, a morning type, and that's just standard variation. There's always individual difference. Most people are neither type. It's quite rare to find someone who's one extreme or the other. The majority of people fall within this neither type, and they fit just the standard circadian picture. If you're a night person, you have this delay, you stay up a lot later, you sleep in a lot later, and that can cause a lot of issues. At a societal level, we tend to judge night people very harshly and really value morning people. There's a merit in being up at 6 a.m. and in work by 7. That person's a good person, whereas the guy that comes into the office at 10 and works until 8 is maybe seems a bit disorganised and a bit, you know, there's an assumption that, oh, probably he was just hungover or something. But it's not the case. These are natural rhythms, and if you can construct a lifestyle around your rhythm, you'll be a lot happier. So, for example, having a job in academia is ideal for a night person because you can start at 10 and that's not an issue.
Has there been any resistance to Chris's proposal to move the start of the lessons to later in the day?
In terms of the conversations we've had so far, I guess what people are reluctant about is the idea that we should be training our adolescents for the working world. That, you know, they need to be in work for 9, they need to be there till 5, and you just need to deal with that. And I understand the merit in that argument, but I think my response to that would be, you're fighting against innate physiology here and actually really damaging someone's education. And isn't it the case that perhaps by giving them a better education, you're in fact better preparing them? And given we know that these biological changes happen and then begin to revert, by the time they're in the working world, they'll probably find that they'll more naturally start slotting into that 9-to-5 window anyway, because everyone eventually does tend towards that direction. So I don't think it's necessarily a fair argument not based on science.
Chris particularly enjoyed the chance to work more in the public domain.
A lot of the work that you do experimentally, you're cloistered in your hospital or in your lab, working with patients one-on-one. And, okay, one should always know what the application of one's research is going to be, but it's usually years down the line. Whereas what's been really fascinating about this project is talking to policymakers, talking to people who are actually going to be using the output of this research, more about what they want to see, what the challenges are for them, and how you actually go about getting something like this on the policy agenda. It's at the real applied end of science, whereas my background has always been more in the sort of human experimental side of things. So for me, I think that's the most fascinating, and I think something that more scientists should be aware of are these output processes.
You've been listening to the Oxford Sparks podcast, narrated by me, Lou Sumner. This podcast was produced for the University of Oxford by Steve Pritchard. For more fascinating science, visit www.oxfordsparks.ox.ac.uk.